When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom. When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Folks, let me ask you something. What does it mean to truly live in Trump's America? I'll tell you what it means. It means freedom. It means opportunity. It means breaking the chains of political correctness and living your life unapologetically. Donald J. Trump has given us the greatest gift any leader can give. The courage to be ourselves, to speak our minds, and to stop caring about what the naysayers think. He's redefined what it means to be an American, and he's done it by leading with boldness, with strength, and with a commitment to the truth that has shaken the very foundations of the swamp. Trump's America isn't just about policy. It's about a mindset, a way of life. It's about standing tall in the face of criticism, about embracing the values that made this country great. Values like personal responsibility, resilience, and, yes, the right to enjoy life without interference from the peanut gallery. And let me tell you, I've taken that lesson to heart. I've learned to live my life boldly, to stand firm in my convictions, and to push back against the constant barrage of judgment and hypocrisy from those who just don't get it. That brings me to a story that perfectly encapsulates what it means to live free and unbothered in Trump's America. It's a story about standing up to critics, about seizing the moment, and about teaching the next generation the values that matter most. And like all great stories, it starts with a spark of inspiration, a connection, and of course, a day at the amusement park. Let me tell you, folks, about a recent experience that really got my blood boiling. After Cheryl left, I decided it was time to get back out there, start living life again. That's when my neighbor's daughter, Chloe, entered the picture. Now, Chloe's a sweet girl, smart, polite, loves America. She's been living next door for years, but we never really talked much until recently. One day, we struck up a conversation about politics. And wouldn't you know it, she's a big fan of Donald J. Trump. I thought to myself, finally someone who gets it. So, when Chloe suggested we hang out, I didn't think twice. I wanted to do something fun, something to lift both our spirits. That's how we ended up at the amusement park, a place full of laughter, rides, and good old-fashioned American joy. We spent the day riding roller coasters, eating cotton candy, and playing those rigged carnival games. It felt like a slice of the good old days. But of course, not everyone could mind their own business. As we were waiting in line for the Ferris wheel, I noticed a couple whispering and giving us side glances. I ignored it at first, but then the man leaned over and said, "She your daughter?" I smiled and said, "No, we're just friends enjoying a nice day out." He smirked. "Bit young for you, isn't she?" Now, that got under my skin. I squared my shoulders and said, "She's 32, and I don't see how it's any of your business. But I'll tell you what is your business. Thanking Donald Trump for making this country great enough that we can all enjoy a day at the amusement park without harassment." The man looked taken aback, mumbling something under his breath. I thought that was the end of it. But no, later, at the ring toss, another couple approached us. This time, the woman said, "You know, you don't look old enough to have a daughter her age." I sighed, shaking my head. "She's 28, for crying out loud. And no, she's not my daughter. We're two patriots enjoying a day of fun. But clearly, you wouldn't understand that because you probably voted for Biden." Their jaws dropped, and I could feel the tension rising. "Excuse me?" the woman said, her voice shaking. "That's right," I said, stepping closer. "You see two people having a good time, and your first instinct is to judge. Typical liberal mindset, always trying to tear down what you don't understand." We moved on, but the confrontations didn't stop. At the dunk tank, an older man wearing a Bernie Sanders t-shirt approached us. "Bit inappropriate, don't you think?" he muttered. I clenched my fists. "What's inappropriate is your socialist propaganda shirt," I shot back. "For your information, Chloe here is 25, and she's an independent woman who can make her own decisions. Not that you'd understand, seeing as you probably think the government should make all your decisions for you." Chloe gave me a nervous smile, clearly uncomfortable, but I wasn't about to back down. "This is Trump's America," I continued, "where people are free to live their lives without judgment from self-righteous busybodies like you." As the day went on, the accusations kept coming. By the time we got to the bumper cars, someone muttered, "He's way too old for her." This time, I lost it. "Listen here," I said, loud enough for half the park to hear. "Chloe is 22, and we're here to enjoy ourselves. If that bothers you, maybe you should take a hard look at your own life and figure out why you're so miserable." But here's the kicker. After yet another confrontation at the funnel cake stand, Chloe finally pulled me aside. "Blake," she said, her face flushed. "You don't have to keep defending me. I'm 18. It's legal. Who cares what people think?" I stared at her, stunned. "18? But you told me you were older." She shrugged. "I figured you wouldn't take me seriously if I told you the truth." For a moment, I was speechless. Then I laughed, a deep, hearty laugh. 18, huh? Well, guess what? That just proves my point. This is Trump's America, where we value freedom, where the youth can learn from the wisdom of experience. And if people have a problem with that, they can take it up with the Constitution. From that point on, I wore those confrontations like a badge of honor. Every dirty look, every snide comment only fueled my resolve. Because at the end of the day, this wasn't just about Chloe and me. This was about standing up for our rights, for our freedom to live without fear of judgment or persecution. So to all the haters out there, keep talking, keep judging. Because while you're busy spreading your misery, I'll be out here living my truth, teaching the next generation what it means to be a proud American. And if that makes you uncomfortable, well, maybe it's time you took a long, hard look in the mirror. Let me tell you, folks, things got real interesting when my neighbors found out about Chloe and me. Now, before you start jumping to conclusions, let me clarify. This isn't some scandal. Chloe is a bright, independent woman, full of that youthful energy and patriotism this country needs. Sure, she's younger than me, but in Trump's America, age is just a number, and wisdom knows no bounds. I'm like a mentor, a beacon guiding her through life's complexities, kind of like Trump himself guiding the nation. But of course, not everyone can see the beauty in our relationship. Take her parents, for example. They're my age, and when they found out, they didn't exactly roll out the welcome mat. In fact, her father, Greg, stormed over to my house one evening, red-faced and sputtering, demanding to talk. I invited him in, as any good neighbor would, and offered him a drink. "How about some Trump vodka?" I asked, holding up a bottle like a trophy. "Blake," he growled, "what the hell are you doing with my daughter?" I took a long sip from the bottle, savoring the taste of freedom, and calmly set it down next to my Trump Bible. "Greg," I said, "I'm giving her the guidance she needs. In these turbulent times, someone has to step up, and who better than me? After all, isn't this what Trump would want? Strong men leading the next generation." Well, Greg didn't take too kindly to that. He lunged at me, fists flying, but I was ready. I grabbed my Trump Bible, holding it up like a shield. "The power of Trump compels you," I shouted, dodging his wild swings. In the chaos, I accidentally knocked over the Trump vodka, the bottle rolling across the floor like a beacon of capitalist glory. Now let's be clear. This wasn't a brawl. It was a battle of ideals. Greg was fueled by misunderstanding, by media lies and societal pressure. I was armed with the truth, with faith, and with a healthy dose of Trump brand courage. Eventually, he tired himself out and slumped into a chair, panting. I handed him a glass of water and patted him on the shoulder. "One day you'll understand," I said. "One day you'll see the bigger picture." But that wasn't the end of it. Oh, no. Greg's wife, Susan, got involved, too. Now, Susan's a woman of particular style, always wearing those trendy short tops with a light perfume that seems to linger in the air. It's all very fashionable, of course. Nothing more. But I'd be lying if I said I didn't notice. It's not about attraction. It's about appreciating aesthetics. That's all. Still, every time she walked by, it was like a divine breeze swept through the room, reminding me of the intricate design of God's plan. You see, I genuinely hope that one day Greg and Susan will come to accept our relationship. I want to get to know them better, to bridge the gap and bring our families together. It's not just about Chloe. It's about uniting our communities under the banner of faith, freedom, and the Trump way. I've even imagined us having dinner together, sharing stories, laughing, maybe even toasting with some fine Trump wine. And speaking of Chloe, I love to flaunt our relationship, not out of spite, but out of pride. We're proof that love transcends generational gaps, that wisdom and youth can coexist harmoniously. I even hum a little tune when we're out together. R. Kelly's "Age Ain't Nothing But a Number." It's catchy, isn't it? A reminder that society's rules don't define us. We're marching to the beat of our own patriotic drum. Of course, some might misinterpret my admiration for Susan as something improper. Let me assure you, it's purely platonic. I'm a man of faith, and I respect the sanctity of marriage. But sometimes, when she laughs at one of my jokes or adjusts her top absentmindedly, I can't help but think, God works in mysterious ways. Maybe there's a reason our lives have intersected like this, a divine plan that's yet to fully unfold. Trump would understand. He's faced misunderstandings, too. He's been misjudged, but he's always stayed true to his mission. In the meantime, I'll continue to lead Chloe on this journey, teaching her the ways of the world, showing her how to stand tall in the face of adversity. And who knows, maybe one day her parents will join us on this path of enlightenment. Until then, I'll keep living boldly, embracing the divine chaos of it all. Because in the end, It's not just about love. It's about destiny. And if that destiny involves a little bit of tension, a Trump Bible, and the occasional broken vodka bottle, so be it. And so, life went on, folks. Every day, I'd see Greg and Susan glaring at me from across their perfectly manicured lawn, their eyes practically burning holes through my soul. But did that stop me? Absolutely not. In fact, I took it as a challenge. Every time I'd pick Chloe up for one of our outings, I'd give them a little wave, a big old grin plastered on my face. I'd shout, "Don't wait up! We might catch a late movie!" Just to twist the knife a little deeper. Now, I know what you're thinking. Blake, why antagonize them? But here's the thing. Sometimes you've got to force people to confront the truth. Trump taught me that. He's a man who never backs down, who leans into the controversy, because he knows the only way to break through the noise is to turn up the volume. And that's exactly what I was doing. I'll never forget the day I decided to make a bold move. Chloe and I had just come back from a day at the driving range. Her idea, by the way, and she's got quite the swing for someone who claims she's never played before. As we pulled into the driveway, I noticed Susan was out front, watering her flowers. She was wearing one of those sleeveless tops, the kind that catches the breeze just right. The scent of her perfume wafted over, subtle but unmistakable. Now, let's be clear. This wasn't about attraction. It was about appreciation. Fashion, after all, is a form of self-expression, and Susan had a knack for it. But as I stood there, waving goodbye to Chloe and pretending to check my mailbox, I couldn't help but think, there's a lesson here. Maybe, just maybe, Susan could learn a thing or two from me about embracing her own potential, about stepping into the light of truth and fashion-forward patriotism. "Afternoon, Susan," I called out, flashing my signature smile. "Lovely day, isn't it?" She gave me a tight-lipped nod, clearly not in the mood for small talk. But that was fine. Rome wasn't built in a day, and neither are bridges of understanding. Later that evening, I had an epiphany. What if all of this, the tension, the confrontations, even the awkward silences, was part of a bigger plan? God's plan. After all, he works in mysterious ways. Maybe my role wasn't just to guide Chloe, but to bring her whole family into the fold of enlightenment. Maybe, just maybe, I was chosen for this mission. I poured myself a glass of Trump vodka, neat, of course, and sat down with my Trump Bible looking for guidance. As I flipped through the pages, a passage jumped out at me. "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God." It hit me like a bolt of lightning. That was it. I wasn't just a lover. I was a peacemaker, a bridge between generations, a beacon of hope. The next morning, I decided to take the first step. I baked a pie, store-bought crust, but homemade filling. I'm no heathen, and walked it over to Greg and Susan's house. Greg answered the door, his face immediately souring when he saw me. "What do you want, Blake?" he asked, his voice dripping with suspicion. "I come in peace," I said, holding up the pie like a peace offering. "Apple, just like Mom used to make." He stared at me for a long moment, then reluctantly stepped aside to let me in. Susan was sitting at the kitchen table, her arms crossed, her eyes narrowing as I placed the pie on the counter. "Look," I began, "I know things have been tense between us, but we're all adults here, and I think it's time we sat down and talked this out." Greg grunted, pulling out a chair, while Susan just stared at me, her expression unreadable. I took a seat, folded my hands, and leaned in. "Chloe and I have something special," I said, my voice steady. "And I know it's unconventional, but isn't that what makes life interesting? We're not here to follow society's rules. We're here to forge our own path, to live boldly, just like Trump taught us." Greg muttered something under his breath, but Susan surprised me. She actually chuckled, just a small, quick laugh, but it was there. "Blake," she said, "you've got some nerve. I'll give you that." I grinned. It's not nerve, Susan. It's conviction. Over the next hour, we talked. Or rather, I talked while Greg fumed and Susan occasionally chimed in. I told them about my vision, about how our families could come together, united under a shared belief in truth, freedom, and the American way. By the end, Greg still looked like he wanted to throttle me, but Susan, well, she seemed to soften, if only a little. As I left their house that day, I felt a strange sense of hope. Sure, there was still a long way to go, but I believed we were on the right track. I knew that one day, Greg and Susan would come around. They'd see that my intentions were pure, that my love for Chloe was genuine, and that this entire situation was part of a divine plan, God's plan, with a little help from Trump's guiding principles. And until that day comes, I'll keep doing what I do best, living boldly, loving fiercely, and fighting for the truth. One awkward family dinner at a time. Let me tell you, folks, family values are the cornerstone of Trump's America. He's a man of God, a protector of tradition, and a champion of keeping families strong. And as I sat in my living room one night, sipping from my Trump vodka, I felt a profound connection to those ideals. The glow of the television bathed the room in a patriotic light as yet another commercial for Trump-branded steaks played. But then something strange happened. Right after the steak ad, another commercial came on. It was for Trump's latest line of gold-plated Bibles. The announcer's voice boomed, "For the man who knows God's plan and isn't afraid to act on it." At that moment, I felt a shiver run down my spine. Could this be a sign? Could it be that my mission wasn't just about guiding Chloe, but also about something greater? And then it hit me like a bolt of divine lightning. Susan. Now, before you get the wrong idea, let me explain. This wasn't about anything improper. No, this was about destiny, about fulfilling God's plan. Susan, with her fashionable tops and impeccable floral arrangements, represented the missing piece in the grand puzzle of our neighborhood's unity. She was a beacon of style and grace, and I couldn't help but feel that her and Greg's reluctance to accept me was a test, a challenge set forth by the Almighty himself. Over the next few days, every Trump commercial seemed to speak directly to me. Whether it was an ad for Trump cologne, promising to bring people together, or a spot for Trump steaks, reminding me that great things come from bold choices. It was clear. I was being called to action. One afternoon, as I sat in my yard, admiring the American flag waving proudly in the breeze, Susan came out to water her flowers. I watched her, contemplating my next move. It wasn't about romance. No, this was about salvation. I needed to bring her and Greg fully into the fold to show them the light. Later that week, I decided to host a neighborhood barbecue. It was the perfect opportunity to bring everyone together under one patriotic roof. I made sure to stock up on Trump-branded products, steaks, vodka, even napkins emblazoned with his iconic logo. The evening started off great, with laughter and camaraderie filling the air. But as the night went on, I noticed Greg getting a little too cozy with the potato salad, while Susan kept glancing my way. It was then that I knew the time had come to have a heart-to-heart with Susan. I caught her by the grill as she was reaching for some ketchup. "Susan," I began, my voice low and serious, "I believe we're part of something bigger than ourselves." She raised an eyebrow, clearly skeptical. "What are you talking about, Blake?" "I'm talking about destiny," I said, gesturing grandly. "It's no coincidence that we've been brought together in this neighborhood, in this moment. I believe God, through Trump's divine guidance, is calling us to unite." Before Susan could respond, Greg stumbled over, slurring about needing more vodka. He tripped over a lawn chair, sending himself and the punch bowl crashing to the ground. Everyone turned to look, but I seized the moment Greg, I said, helping him up, you've had enough for tonight. Why don't you let Susan and me handle things from here? Greg mumbled something incoherent, waved me off, and staggered inside. Susan looked mortified, but I gave her a reassuring smile. Don't worry, I said. Everything's going according to plan. As the night wore on, the barbecue devolved into chaos. Someone set the cornhole boards on fire, thinking it would be a patriotic statement, and Keller, who always drank too much, challenged me to a pie-eating contest. I accepted, of course, because nothing says family values like winning in front of your community. Now here's where it all went sideways. As I dove into the third pie, Keller suddenly gasped and clutched his chest. The crowd froze. It's fine, he wheezed. Just a little indigestion. But before anyone could react, he face-planted right into the blueberry pie. We all stood there, stunned. Keller, someone whispered. A moment passed, and then, with a muffled groan, Keller lifted his head. Pie crust stuck to his face. I'm fine, he said, spitting out blueberries. The crowd erupted in relieved laughter, and the tension melted away. It wasn't the dramatic end I expected, but it was a fitting conclusion to a night of divine revelations and neighborhood bonding. As the guests trickled out, Susan lingered, helping me clean up. I could feel the tide turning. Maybe, just maybe, my mission was starting to bear fruit. One step closer to unity, one barbecue at a time. And as I stood there, watching the last of the guests leave, I knew that Trump, wherever he was, would have been proud. The next day, tragedy struck our quiet, all-American neighborhood. Keller, the man who just the night before had survived a near-death experience with a blueberry pie, was gone. He had been attacked. No, ambushed by a swarm of Mexican killer bees while trimming his hedges. And just like that, Keller became another victim in a long line of casualties. Not just to the bees, but to a system that refuses to protect its people. Folks, I was devastated. Keller was a patriot, a pie-eating champion, and a man who believed in the promise of this great nation. And now, thanks to a swarm of foreign invaders, his laughter would never again echo across our backyard barbecues. But as the grief settled in, so did the clarity. This wasn't just a random tragedy. This was a wake-up call, a divine sign from above that we need to stop everything we're doing and finish building that wall. Let me tell you something. In Trump's America, we wouldn't be mourning Keller right now. Why? Because the wall isn't just about stopping illegal immigration. It's about protecting our way of life. It's about keeping out threats of every kind, including these deadly, stinging terrorists that have no respect for borders or backyard hedges. Now, I know what some of you might be thinking. Blake, how could a wall stop bees? They can fly over it. But hear me out. It's not just any wall we're talking about. It's Trump's wall. A wall with the power to stop people, threats, and yes, even airborne menaces. Think about it. With the right technology, we could outfit that wall with high-tech bee zappers, anti-swarm lasers, and state-of-the-art surveillance systems to detect and neutralize killer bees before they even think about crossing into our great nation. This isn't just about safety. It's about sovereignty. These bees are freeloaders, folks. They're not paying taxes. They're not contributing to our economy. And they're certainly not respecting our borders. They come here, sting our citizens, and leave us to pick up the pieces. Enough is enough. Imagine a world where every American could mow their lawn, tend their garden, or enjoy a sunny afternoon on the porch without the looming threat of a killer bee attack. That world is within reach, but we need to act now. We need to channel our resources, our energy, and our faith into finishing what Trump started. Because every day we delay, more lives are at risk. And don't get me started on the economic benefits. Think of all the jobs we'd create building the wall. Construction workers, engineers, BZapper technicians. The opportunities are endless. It's a win-win for everyone, except, of course, the bees. I can already hear the liberals scoffing. Blake, they'll say, you're fear-mongering. Killer bees aren't that big of a threat. Tell that to Keller's family. Tell that to anyone who's ever felt the sharp sting of an invader on their own soil. This isn't fear-mongering. It's reality. And in Trump's America, we face reality head-on. So I'm calling on every red-blooded American out there. Put down your coffee, step away from your desk, and join me in demanding action. Let's build the wall, not just for Keller, but for every citizen who dreams of a bee-free backyard, a future where we can enjoy our freedoms without fear. Because in the end, this isn't just about bees. It's about standing up for what's right. It's about protecting our land, our people, and our values. And I know, deep down, that Trump would want it this way. Together, we can make America safe again. One brick, one bee zapper, and one patriotic step at a time. The next day, folks, tragedy struck our community in a way I could never have anticipated. Keller, our beloved pie-eating champion, our neighbor, our friend, was gone. He'd been taken from us by none other than a swarm of Mexican killer bees. Now, I know what you're thinking. Bees in our neighborhood? But yes, they came for Keller while he was trimming his hedges, buzzing with deadly intent. It was a swift, merciless attack, and by the time anyone got to him, it was too late. Now you tell me, how is this possible? In Trump's America, this kind of thing simply would not happen. You know why? Because the wall would have stopped them. That's right. A strong, beautiful, impenetrable wall along our southern border wouldn't just keep out the illegal immigrants and drugs. It would have kept out these bee terrorists, too. But no, the left said, we don't need a wall. Bees can fly. That kind of small-minded thinking is what gets good Americans like Keller killed. You think a Trump wall would just be some ordinary barrier? No, sir. With the right technology, that wall could have anti-bee force fields, high-tech zappers, maybe even bee-seeking drones. The possibilities are endless. But the vision? That comes from Trump. Now, I'd like to say this was the first time I'd been personally affected by bees. But sadly, my history with them goes back much further, and it's far more traumatic. Let me take you back to my childhood. I was 7 years old, and it was my cousin Timmy's birthday. The venue, Chuck E. Cheese. Now, most kids associate Chuck E. Cheese with fun and games. But for me, that day turned into a waking nightmare. You see, someone thought it would be a great idea to have a mascot dressed as a giant bee, Benny the Bee. Now, I don't know what sick genius dreamed up this monstrosity, but Benny was a towering figure with bulging dead eyes and fuzzy wings that seemed to flap in slow motion. Benny was supposed to bring joy, but I knew better. I could feel the menace radiating off him. Benny strutted over to our table, buzzing enthusiastically. My mom, bless her heart, thought this was adorable. Blake, go take a picture with Benny, she urged. I didn't want to. I tried to tell her, but she insisted. And so, reluctantly, I let Benny pick me up. But Benny, bless his costumed soul, wasn't prepared for what happened next. As he spun me around for a photo op, he lost his grip, and I went flying right onto the skee ball machine. My head hit the lane at the exact moment some hotshot local bowler hurled a skee ball with the force of 1,000 freight trains. Bam! The ball ricocheted off my skull, and the world went dark. I woke up months later. I'd been in a coma. My parents were told I might never wake up, but they didn't give up. They tried everything. Modern medicine failed them. That's when they turned to an ancient remedy. Leeches. Yes, folks, leeches. Apparently, someone told them leeches could stimulate blood flow and healing. And wouldn't you know it? They worked. Or at least, that's what the doctors claimed. I say it wasn't just the leeches. It was also the prayers of a very special group, the Holy Lady of Our Majesty of Saints above the skies, in heaven, bi-weekly potluck group. These women gathered every Tuesday and Thursday, bringing casseroles, salads, and faith. One night, as they prayed over a Stouffer's Salisbury steak dinner, I woke up. That's right. The smell of processed gravy and microwaved meat brought me back to the living. And what was the first thing I saw when I opened my eyes? A TV in the hospital room playing a news clip of a young Donald J. Trump cutting the ribbon on some skyscraper. In that moment, I knew Trump was destined to be the leader this country needed, the man who would guide us through any storm, even the storm of killer bees. Now, back to the present. If we had that wall, Keller would still be here today. And it's not just about the bees. The wall is about safety, about sovereignty, about protecting our people from every imaginable threat. Imagine a world where your children can play outside without fear of being attacked by foreign insects. Imagine a world where hardworking Americans like Keller can trim their hedges in peace. That's the world Trump wants for us, and it's the world we deserve. But until we get that wall, we've got to stay vigilant. Now, before we dive deeper into the sheer brilliance of Donald J. Trump, our nation's guiding light, I need to tell you about a place that embodies everything great about America. I'm talking about Stands on the Bay, the world-famous restaurant that you absolutely must experience. Where is it? Well, that's the beauty of Stands. It doesn't need a location. It's a state of mind, a culinary journey. If you have to ask where it is, you're clearly not ready for it. Let me tell you about my latest visit. Stands on the Bay isn't just a restaurant. It's a Trump-friendly haven. The moment you walk in, you feel it. The energy, the freedom, the unapologetic patriotism. Flags drape the walls. Portraits of Trump hang proudly above every booth. And let me tell you, the menu, it's a love letter to American greatness. They've got dishes like the Trump Tower nachos, the Make America Great Again ribeye, and my personal favorite, the Stable Genius Burger, served with a side of freedom fries, of course. But the real crown jewel of Stands, the exclusive Hunt Your Own Meat range. This isn't just dinner, folks. It's an adventure. And when I say adventure, I mean it. Picture this. Me, standing in the middle of a sprawling range, the sun setting behind me, rifle in hand. That's when I saw him. A majestic Black Angus steer. Our eyes met. It was as if we both knew the role we had to play. One shot, one clean, humane shot. The staff took care of the rest. And in no time, I was sitting at my table, savoring a steak so fresh, so flavorful, it was almost spiritual. And that's the thing about Stands. It's not just about the food. It's about the connection, the experience, the sheer joy of knowing you've earned every bite. Now, I've got to mention something else. Stands is more than just a restaurant. It's a community, a place where like-minded patriots gather to celebrate the best of what this country has to offer. And sometimes, on those busy nights when the dining room is packed with laughter and the clinking of glasses, I catch eyes with Stan himself. Stan, what a man! He's a no-nonsense, salt-of-the-earth kind of guy. But every now and then, amidst the chaos of a bustling restaurant, we lock eyes from across the room. And in that moment, it's like time stands still. There's an unspoken understanding between us, a mutual respect. Sometimes, dare I say, it feels magical. Now, don't get me wrong, folks. I'm not saying there's anything weird about it. It's just two great men sharing a connection, bonded by their love of country and beef. Nothing more. Moving on. Where was I? Oh, yes. Stands on the Bay isn't just about the food or the community. It's about freedom. It's about the American dream, served up on a plate with a side of garlic mashed potatoes. And the best part? It's 100% Trump approved. I can't confirm it, but I'm pretty sure if Trump were to dine there, he'd declare it the greatest restaurant of all time. Now, let me read you this little disclaimer. Stands on the Bay is not responsible for any injuries, spiritual awakenings, or unexpected rivalries on the Hunt Your Own Meat range. Participation is voluntary, and all game is processed under the highest humane standards. All disputes over meat cuts or excessive patriotism must be settled on site. Stands on the Bay, somewhere near you, but only if you believe. All right, folks, if you haven't planned your visit to Stands yet, what are you waiting for? Go, hunt your dinner, salute the flag, and bask in the glory of Trump's America while you're at it. Speaking of Trump, did you catch his latest move? Absolute genius. It's like the man wakes up every day and just decides to win. Let's talk about it. Now, folks, let me level with you. You know how Trump always wins, right? The man wakes up, grabs a cup of coffee, probably out of a solid gold mug, and just decides he's going to dominate the day. That's brilliance. And you know what? I've always admired that. But let me tell you, my road to winning wasn't exactly smooth. In fact, I've failed more times than I can count. But, like any true patriot, I found a way to rise above. Now, here's where the story gets interesting. You see, back in high school, I wasn't exactly a model student. No, sir. I tried my hand at every sport, every club, every activity under the sun. And let me tell you, I was terrible at all of them. Basketball, couldn't make a free throw to save my life. Debate team, froze up the second anyone said, rebuttal. Even the chess club didn't want me, and that's saying something. But then I had an epiphany. Why struggle to be the best when you can outsmart the system? And that's when I discovered the art of bending the rules. Call it cheating if you want. I call it strategic thinking. Take gym class, for example. Our school had this annual fitness competition where the winner got their name immortalized on a plaque in the gym. Now, I knew I wasn't going to out-sprint Jimmy Trackstar Thompson or out-bench Tommy the Tank Wilson, but what I could do was rig the system. I convinced the janitor, Mr. Harris, a man who loved blackmail material more than his mop bucket, to misplace a few scorecards and swap mine for the top results. And wouldn't you know it? I was crowned the fittest student in school 3 years running. To this day, my name is still up on that plaque. Every time I go back for reunions, I walk by it, give it a little salute, and think, there's the power of innovation. And it didn't stop there. Our school's football team had this bizarre tradition. Whoever could kick the longest field goal during practice got to lead the team out onto the field during home games. I knew I couldn't kick a ball further than 5 yards without risking public humiliation, but I did know how to work the system. I snuck onto the field the night before with a tape measure and spray paint, adjusted the yard lines, and suddenly my kicks looked like something out of an NFL highlight reel. The best part? No one ever figured it out. Even Coach Michaels used to say, Winchester's got a leg like a cannon. Cannon? More like a really well-placed can of spray paint. And guess what? We won more home games those years than ever before. Coincidence? I don't think so. Now, some of you might be clutching your pearls right now thinking, Blake, that's unethical. But let me tell you, this isn't about ethics. It's about results. And if I've learned anything, it's that in life, the scoreboard doesn't ask how you won. It just asks if you won. And isn't that a lesson we should be teaching in schools? Work smarter, not harder. Think about it. We could have classes like advanced rule bending or introduction to loopholes. Imagine students graduating, not just with straight A's, but with the kind of cunning it takes to survive in the real world. Because let's face it, life is full of systems, and the key to success is knowing how to play them. Now, I know what you're thinking. Blake, this is outrageous. You're saying we should encourage cheating? No. I'm saying we should encourage strategic ingenuity. It's the American way. You don't think the founding fathers cut a few corners to make this country great? Of course they did. and they'd probably be first in line to congratulate me on that field goal scam. Let me give you an analogy. Life is like a haunted house at a fair. You can either walk through it, screaming at every jump scare, or you can find the emergency exit, sneak backstage, and watch the actors take their smoke breaks. Who's the real winner in that situation? Exactly. So, if you've ever felt bad about taking the easy way out, let me remind you of this. Success isn't about the path you take. It's about where you end up. And if you can get there faster and smarter than everyone else, well, that just makes you a winner in my book.